to our new Mick Artistics Ego podcast. We'll be bringing you chat, insight, nonsense, laughter, music, and a few surprises. You can find out about our current activities, gigs, release news at mickartistic.com and on Facebook at Mick Artistics Ego Trip, as well as plenty of footage on our YouTube channel. And you can follow us on Twitter at Mick Artistic and at Johnny Ego Trip and at Ego Trip News. Welcome to podcast number 11. Today's guest is Nathan Clark. Nathan runs the Broodnell Social Club in Leeds. The Broodnell has hosted some amazing and interesting events with acts such as Jonathan Richman, Sleaford Mods, Martha and the Vandellas, Joanna Newsom, and Mick Artistic's Ego Trip. In today's podcast, we discuss Nathan's career as a footballer, playing for Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield and Portland in the United States, his 20-plus years getting the Broodnell off the ground, harvesting the local talent, the Unity Day Festival, Cabaret Heaven, Coat Hanger Man, and defining what a DIY band is. First of all, Nathan, what made you finally decide to book Mick Artistic's Ego Trip?
that's a good question, isn't it? When you kept coming? I mean, we love it. And then we met and we did. And we says, we're going to do it properly. Let's get on BBC Radio Leeds. And we went down there together. You remember that?
I don't remember that. But I do remember feeling a vast wave of relief when I finally did cross the threshold. And because I remember, I think it was 2007, there was a Cabaret Heaven night on.
Yeah.
And it was like Cabaret Heaven was like kind of a comedians, alternative comedy kind of.
It had good music. It had good music, yeah, the Haggis Horns and the other lot.
And that was kind of a regular thing. There was
it was on monthly, and then it went to bi-monthly and stuff like that. Mike and the others used
Mike Hancock.
Yeah, that's going back a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's like what, that's 13, 14 longer. But yeah. I remember the main headline act couldn't do it or something, and they said, would you do it? And I was really, I'd never headlined before, I thought, geez. So, and then I think I asked you for some extra money, and you said, no, that's money stays the same or something.
It won't be me, it'll be Mike.
It might be Mike.
We always took like note to do with it, and I think we were just a venue, but
yeah,
we learnt loads off them, to be honest. And just about the variety that they did, they were great nights.
We used to play every now and again.
Chunky but Funky played. I mean, they started going in like the late 1990s through to 2000. I remember it distinctly. They were in the mid 90s and all the way through to, they went for about 10 or 15 years.
I can remember Misty Valentine, and they had some really odd people, like George Egg, some really daft sort of names.
Yeah, I remember watching somebody, right, who came on and put a coat hanger through his nose, he had it pierced, through his nose, and then he hung his jacket on it, and then he took his shirt off, and he put the shirt on the thing, and then he put his jacket back on it, and he was hanging his nose.
Oh.
And then he took his pants off, and he got fully undressed and put his things on this, folded them up and put them up like you'd put a suit from dry cleaners on this coat hanger through his nose. And he was stood there basically on stage with just his underpants on.
And that was the act.
And that was the act.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just bonkers.
Yeah.
But everyone sat there bewildered and like utterly bestowned. And then you'd have that, and then you'd have like Haggis Horns come on, and everyone would be like dancing and having a great time. It'd be, and then you'd have a comedian on before that, or a bit of cat.
I just assumed it was more like just kind of like cabaret sort of clowns, burlesque stuff. I didn't realise you'd have people like the Haggis Horns. And
they always finish the night off with some music, so it always finished with something. I remember, well, I think it was the Millennium, or it might have been the year 1999, that we got them to program like one of the New Year's Eves, and they got like a Beatles, alternative Beatles covers band thing that they did to play it. And I tell you what, a lot of the people were involved. Bassa Bassa, do you know Bassa Bassa?
I know Bassa Bassa,
so,
yeah.
So all those guys, they were involved partly with it. and played very regular. They used to practice in our back room for years, did Bassa Bassa. They practiced here for like, that was definitely the 1990s.
Back room, what do you mean your back room? Through where the snooker hall is, and then to that little then room to the other side. Room.
Yeah, where that was.
Where they have like little parties, kind of. Little.
They used to be, yeah.
So yeah, I remember coming here playing snooker one Sunday afternoon, and there was some kind of, one of like Leeds' little flashy little bands were having like a party in this like side room or something.
Yeah, so that was a practice room for about 8 or 10 years. And Bassa used to have it on a Tuesday night. Every Tuesday they'd practice. And then other bands, Cowtown and Brown Hour.
Cowtown, good band.
Load of the old Leeds DIY bands that are not necessarily around, Printed Circuit, the Cops and Robbers kind of scene were all existed in there, and there came a point where.
Define what a DIY band is, because I see these little kind of like fans.
You're
in the
a pamphlet. DIY band.
I've seen it around, but I just if somebody asked me what that meant, I'd say I don't know. It means do it yourself band.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I wouldn't say there's
somebody without a manager. You mean, or somebody without a record label?
I'm not saying I made the definition. What I'd say is that I think it's a good challenge to everyone out there, to be honest, to define that. I think that it is something that you do it yourself, but actually, you know, maybe the focus isn't primarily on economical benefit and breaking the world and being the most biggest artist, as in, like, you know, you're not going out there to be Arctic Monkeys to
you're not looking to get on television, sort of like 5 days.
Not saying no, you are looking to do that, but you're not looking to clearly. You're not looking to like, oh, our main goal is to headline Wembley Arena. Mick Artistic's goal is probably play some great music, write some stuff, play great gigs, play the festivals, have a good time, make a living, and enjoy life. Right.
That sounds fine. Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
We can stop now, Nathan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but there's others that have, like, this grand plan where they want to be world domination and the biggest band in the world. And I think there's a difference there. And that those look out for a manager and a big label and everything else. Where, you know, I look at when you talk about Cowtown and I go...
So maybe less ambitious then.
No, because I guess... What's the ambition? This is something that I love to challenge, because I'd say... I always bring this up when there's people who talk about success in music, because for me, success, I look at people like Bassa and Bilge Pump and that, where they go, their success is they've brought out 3 or 4 records, people love watching them, they enjoy what they do. Playing in front of 10,000 people in a gig isn't necessarily as enjoying and life-fulfilling as what I'm getting some debts and not really having the overall enjoyment and luxury that you might get. Does it get you in a position financially for the rest of your life? It's a very finite few people who can probably have a lifetime economic backed career out of music.
I'm surprised, intrigued by that, because I would have assumed that your idea of like success is like, well, success is when somebody makes it out of here and goes to the art, like you know, you were talking about maybe the Wooden Tops or somebody else, or somebody who basically
great, isn't it? Yeah, that's amazing. I love to see bands coming in who come in at first step, get bigger, play and share their music and art form to many people. That's beautiful, right? Is it turned better than somebody who actually wants to make music because they make great music and they just want to share it with a lot of people, and the goal isn't to play to 10,000 people? Is there any better? Why should we judge better than other? I think that you've just got to see them on the merit.
I mean, I had this guy come round on Saturday. He's a fella called Robert Pargett, who's making a film called Breakfast with Iggy. He's made this documentary, and he heard about me, and he said, "Oh, Iggy really likes you." And I'd been listening to the Six music, and I heard Plastic Fox, and it was like hearing the Stooges for the first time. He said, and I was like, "Well, that's lovely, you know." And then he brought food and stuff, and then he says, "Why aren't you bigger?" And I really didn't know how to sort of answer that, you know, because a bit of me was thinking, well, if I died today, I'd be happy. I could go to heaven. I could go to meet whatever. Go to the coffin. So thinking, well, shit, I've wandered around Leeds with a biro, and I've met some extraordinary monsters, and I've written some songs that I'm really proud, and done some drawings that I'm really, and I've gone to the mountain. I know myself. I've gone to the fucking. I've had to find stuff. And to me, I think, well, I'm a gold medal winner in my own head.
You don't need anyone to.
I don't. The thing is, just I've won. I mean, I've got to, you know, I went to Edinburgh and I got like, I won a prize at the Channel 4 competition and stuff. And I got a big check and stuff. And I went to the winner's party, and it was the most joyless affair. There's all these fucking stars around there. And I saw them, it was Julian Clary and Paul Merton and bloody, all that. Just, and they were dead.
Yeah, honestly, I can go behind there and say, There's awards for best venue 2020, 19, 18, or whatever else, right? Do I put them up on the bar? Probably should do, right? Because it displays what awards we've done. But those are in there for the staff that worked here, for the recognition that they did at that time. And it's great, but we don't need to. I think for me, it's just self-recognition and being happy with what we're doing.
Self-recognition and is good. That'll do that,
I think that, you know, some people find recognition, the need, that endorsement. I don't know what
I need a certain amount of that, and it's very, it's lovely. It's like getting a sort of a big sort of eating mess or something. It's a lovely, you know, you go, oh, wow. But there's a certain... Sometimes you just kind of stop and say, well, that's lovely, but I'm an old guy now and it means nothing. Because tomorrow, I mean, I've got to go home to my missus, and I have to look after her, and I've got to get the house clean because it's a shithole, you know. And this is very nice being...
It didn't look like it on that stream we did.
Well, I haven't backed the house in about...
but my point is that I think there's a difference, and I think music is one of those things where it kind of crosses between art and business, and sometimes the view is like, oh, it must be about the business, and success is measured on how many units you've sold, or what your position is, or how many people you play to. And then there's other sides of it. Yes, that's great, and yes, we want to champion that and have that ability if that's what somebody wants, go for it. But that shouldn't be any better judge than people who actually are accountants, love being accountants, or bus drivers, or train drivers, or anything else, right? Electricians. And actually, really love playing music, are damn talented at it, can write amazing songs, and they love doing their job, and this is a recreation. It shouldn't be judged better than others because someone can sell out Wembley or not. And I think that, you know...
It's funny, it's funny when you can get sort of caught up in it. And I find myself sometimes getting a little bit kind of hysterical, something. I kind of get drawn in something. Oh shit, we should be on Jules Holland, or we should be doing better. And then there's a bit, like I was in town on Saturday, and there was a guy there singing Angels and singing Mr. Brightside and stuff on his own. He's got like these tapes, and about four or five little 14-year-old girls are just sort of standing there, and he's there, and he's got this whole wide space of emptiness, and he's belting out Angels and Mr. Brightside, and his voice was great, and he was saying, come on, Lees, let's dance, let's move it, you know. And I stood there, and I was just standing by Marks and Spencer, and I just started to clap, and I was singing along, and I'm there with my partner and my daughter, and I just felt, I was really happy for them. And I'm thinking, God, it's a great thing to sing. Yeah. I've just missed live stuff. And no matter how...
Do you know what I really enjoy here? And this is what I think is great about this venue, particularly that happens, is that we can have on that stage, I look at it in the past, you know, and I go, yeah, Johnny Marr might have stood up there on Friday night. But on Saturday, it was... the local artist stood in the same position with the same care and attention from the front of house engineer Trevor or Stuart or anyone else, with the same attention given. There's no like hierarchy. Barrier, hierarchy, view on it. It's like you can all have that same platform to put your art out on. And I'm really proud that we're in that position that we can do that or offer that and not have, you know, and not be judgmental about it. That's what I think is great. And not have any, I don't look at you and go, Mickey Artistic's great, and because he can come and now sell 400 tickets, he should be get better preference than the Prince tribute that comes as well, or, you know, than Cowtown.
I've kind of got that since I've sort of known you. I wasn't sure initially. I thought, God, he's fucking hard work, because I, you know, because I'd be ringing and I'm thinking, oh yeah, he's probably. I was getting really, really annoyed, really angry because you weren't picking up the phone or you'd be just blah blah. But then finally, sort of, you did, and I sort of, I've grown to love you over the last 10 years. Because I see that you're actually sort of, there isn't any sort of scheming sort of stuff going on there, you know. And I meet quite a lot of people, and I, you know, whatever, people that run gigs, and I trust you basically, I, you know, because I can see that you don't curry favour, and you're just basically here for this. This is the best fucking job you've got, innit? You're not going to be, you know.
I'd love to do other things at times, you know, but you can't always do them, can you? Things move on, times change or whatever else. But I do look at it and I go, this is where I've grown up, you know. This is where my parents ran. I've got other interests and business interests outside of it.
Because this place, I was just reading up this morning, but this place is like when your mum and dad, you took over in like the early 90s, like 90s.
Yeah, they worked here a bit before that, slightly, yeah. And my dad was a plasterer. And
so what were they putting on acts then, like sort of like what you were putting on
now? My dad were involved here from 80s, right, as a committee member, and my mum was slightly working at the bar and stuff like that. She used to work at the chemist at the end of the road as a dispenser as well.
All right, yeah.
At the one on Brudenell Road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With Manjit and them there. And then they came in the bar, and what happened is, you know, places which are typically run by committees and stuff, you know, everyone kind of wants to take stuff from it. And they then took over in a kind of management role, and the committee who were there basically just started. There were two people, and it's true, I won't name any names, but they took a lot of money out of it. One of them was an accountant person who was to do with it, who basically shredded the books for a couple of years, just took them away.
Old were you then? When
I were like 12 or 13, 14, you know, going through it, 12 or something like that. And you're already here and living here. And the HMRC come in, and there were nothing that anyone could do at that time, you know. There was nothing. You couldn't say how much things had taken. It wasn't that. It's just like, basically, the two guys had just taken everything, left the place as it was, and it was just about to be shut down. And my dad had been in a car accident, actually. Someone went into him on the motorway, and he had a bit of his ear cut off, and he got some compensation. Yeah. And he said, I love the place, working here. Should we try and give it a go? And he basically paid off the debts that he got, the club had got, with his own compensation, you know. Yeah, yeah. And it was a bit like, okay, we'll give it a go. And that was the start of it. And then you had these things like Cabaret Heaven, Termite Club.
Because the Termite Club was at the Pack Horse, I think, and down at the Adelphi.
Yeah.
So I used to go watch Zero Slingsby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was wacky as hell, right?
Oh, yeah.
I can
remember sitting there with a drawing, because I was getting so much of a buzz off the music on stage. I'd take my paper bag in, and they'd be like Slaughterhouse Five on stage or Slingsby or somebody. And I'm just buzzing because I just sold a couple of drawings. I loved music and what it did. And I'd be sitting in the place like the Grove or in wherever, and just at the back scribbling drummers.
So, yeah, I think that what happened was my dad looked at the place and then says, let's just give it a go. It wasn't as nice. It was run down. You know, there were some cars out the front. There was X, Y, and Z, big trees there. And you know, when you just go, let's give it a go. He was a plasterer at the time, and he'd been, you know, he was like 50, whatever, and he'd been working outdoors for however long.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
just said, I've had enough of working in the cold all winter, doing whatever else. Should we give this a go? And he paid off the HMRC, paid off the debts, got it to a place. We renegotiated the brewery deal, so it won that. And it was just a kind of like going, let's give it a fighting chance. And it was also just kind of going, let's open the doors up to what is real on the ground community in Leeds.
Leeds stuff. So you
get
like a different stuff, like Termite Club, or you'd get Cabaret Head.
Do you know when
whatever.
Like Mike Jolly opened Oblong?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oblong Studios.
I never realised that
because
he had Clothcat.
Oblong moved into Clothcat, right? So before Clothcat, it was Oblong. Oblong Projects
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we do like, you know, when you look at like the Hyde Park riots, right, in the 1994 up the road, and they happened just up there. And
yeah,
we
yeah.
we grew up around.
Is that where the Newlands got
where the Newlands got burned down?
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
you know, when they were talking about Hyde Park Unity Day, that come out of a conversation in the Brudenell between a few people who were having a meeting, and I remember it vividly in this room now where we sat, where they were having a meeting, going, "What should we do? Should we come up with some idea that shows the area of unity, you know, and togetherness rather than against the riots?" And you had Sue Buckle and Amit and Kevin Bone and Mike Jolly and lots of people come together and said, "Do you know what, we should do this, and we'll let Mike do the music, and we'll get you know."
Because they had a do in the Royal Park. They had a Unity Day. I remember the first one. I did a spot. I got a.
We did a
poetry.
Lot of fundraisers to raise money for the first Unity Day. Right,
yeah,
that's what we did.
Yeah.
And you know, Chumbawamba I think played some stuff and. And everyone kind of, because they used to live in the back street at the time. And it was stuff like that that kind of raised and opened the doors to the DIY community coming in. And then a couple of years later, you know, like a year or so later, you know, I remember Joanna Newsom coming and playing here.
Wow.
And it was like, what you could tell going through her head, what the hell have I come to here?
Yeah.
But, you know, the PA was all like self-funded and put together and... Yeah, a bit ramshackle, and you have to grow with it. But I think it came out of...
So was Trevor here? Was like, was
Trevor here started maybe? Bringing in the PAs then, yeah. So
oh.
Trevor was here. So Trevor's been here for as long as anyone, like 15, 20 years. And, no, 20, longer than that, 20, 25 years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that the point is with the place is that there's no plan. Like you said, there's no scheming. There's no... It's not like at the start... It was a genuine kind of like, if I take it from a parent's view, it was like, can we do something that actually isn't going out and being in the cold and doing that? Can we take a project and can we make it work? Right, we're trying to make it work and you put a bit of effort into it. And then, you know, from my point of view, it was very much, my father got ill. I came back from America when I was playing a bit of football. And it was like.
So what were you doing? What do you mean you were playing? Were you like
playing professional football in America?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, in Portland. And
right.
And he got ill, and I come back, and you realise there's a you know. I mean, I grew up here as well, so being up until you know 18, 19, I was still around here, and I were only away for a couple of
years.
So
were you playing football around here as well then?
Yeah, so I played in Leeds City Boys, West.
Oh, my brother did.
West Riding County Amateur,
yeah.
You know.
Oldfield Lane down there.
Yeah, Oldfield Lane. Yeah. And
yeah.
And you know West Riding County at Woodlesford when you went up a level
yeah.
And then for you know got signed.
So what were you forward or were you
no centre half?
All right,
the right back.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
but you know
yeah.
played at, then at Sheffield Wednesday got signed for them when I was 16 and did like 2 years YTS like academy now and did a bit of coaching and stuff and then went got signed. To this club in America and went over there for Portland Timbers for a couple of years and it was great but you know when you come back and you think I've got well your family's not well
yeah,
you've got cancer
yeah.
And you just have to do what's good and you grow to kind of think you make your friends are here and the music community's here and everyone else is around and there's those people that you kind of grow an affinity and a love for and the rest of it and it
Ooh.
And it means more than money you know
yeah.
And I think that this
there's
now,
a lot of substantial people around here. There's a lot of like people like there's people I know like Andy Beresford, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know,
so I went like I say, I went to school with Andy's son,
Felix.
Felix,
yeah.
And
yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of. I mean, Bob's walking through now, and Bob's been here forever. You know, I think that
Bob Denim.
Bob. Bob Smith. And I think that there's more... It's living, breathing, real.
It's like an allotment, this place, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and it's organic. And I think that, you know, you imagine trying to go into, if you want to compare it to an allotment, that's a great analogy, to be honest. And I'm the kind of gardener, caretaker of this allotment, and you can do, but you don't want to go, oh, the tomatoes are more important than the cucumbers.
Yeah, yeah.
No. And I think that you
I get that. I mean,
you've got to water it. And I think that what I've been proud to do is actually over the years be fair to everyone that's been in Leeds and come and played here. Never try to rip or bullshit anyone. Just try to be fair.
Cut
because
to the chase, no.
And it's also just it's you know, it's my home. And I can have other business interests, you know, like the one in Otley or the one in town.
Do you live upstairs?
I do. I still love it, honestly.
Okay.
I still live upstairs. And even though I've got, you know, I've got a house elsewhere, I've got this pull to be here. It's like the umbilical cord.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't...
No, because I know I only noticed when I was coming down through the car park, and I kind of looked up and I could see there's like a little light in the window, like a little shade, like a big sort of fleshy coloured thing, whatever. And
yeah.
That's somebody's living it there.
Yeah, me and my mum still live there, you know.
Right.
And
is it just you on your own then? You've not got a brother or a...
No. I mean, we've got lots of brothers, but they're all off doing stuff. Jimmy still, my brother, he works here in the morning as a cleaner, doing it every day. And then, you know, my other brother, he comes and does line cleaning and helps out on the rest of the stuff. And
that's like sound stuff, line cleaning, is it?
No.
Cleaning. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, the beer, yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
I mean is there's a genuine, you know, and then when you talk about other, like I say, you know, Bob's been here forever and handyman work, and there's just a lot of people in the kind of...
Just people growing old here, aren't there?
Yeah, but it's, you might call it, you know, an extended family as such. You know, the people like Bob, I'd consider family.
Just to butt in here, if you were poorly, if you went down with COVID, or you just basically, if you were poorly and you had like a bad virus, who, and yet you were kind of out of the picture for like kind of 2 weeks, what had happened?
I think
who would look, who would...
I think we've put in place over the last 5, 6, 7, 10 years, we've learnt to put measures in place that are like the accounts are all taken care of. Jill, who looks after the operations, you know, and other stuff, and there's, you know,
so there's somebody will step in.
Yeah, we've built those in.
You have a few,
you know,
people.
As the venue's grown, and we've understood the ways, and we've reinvested in things.
Yeah.
We've learnt to put balances and checks and protection measures in. You know,
so
that it kind of works. I think there's been it needed to have that, and it needed to have that to become a more professional, sustainable place, you know. It needs.
Well, I suppose you've learnt that over just over time. You pick stuff up.
Do you know what the trouble? So I went to uni, right, and did a when I finished football, my dad was here. I took on a degree, and then I went back and did a master's, right. And my master's were in business, and at Leeds, and I did a bit of a study on the place, and from a business point of view, we run it almost against all the advice that someone would tell you to do. So the prices aren't at certain value. Or I think we do it because it's a bit like a social enterprise, you know, like building the new venue at the other side, right? We built up that money for 10 years. I invested, I don't know how many hours in finding out about soundproofing and, you know, speakers that wouldn't push the noise backwards, just lots of other kind of things like rubber insulators of sound. And
so is that a better sound system in there than it is in here?
They're both equal. I'm not going to get into that. But no business would invest that amount of money that we invested into building a room that is never ever going to generate the amount of money back that it's been put into it. But because it brings more to the venue and you can do more with it and you can have more, it's worthwhile for me. It's not a profit-making project. It's not something that I see this as kind of part of my life, other people's lives, people that have helped save the place with the fire doors when we had stuff. How can I say that? I want people to come here and feel some level of ownership, even though they're technically you don't own it, right?
Mm.
But I want you to come in and think, the Brutonel's a bit mine, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just
can't explain that, but it's that intangible kind of thing that you go,
I've got my passport to come in here. Yeah. I belong in here.
You're a patron or something else, yeah, you know. Whatever, what I'm saying is, I think that there's establishments that are publicly funded and ones that are commercially organised and there's ones like that, but they don't have a living, breathing, overall kind of thing behind it. You know, you can walk here and you come the other day and I was out there just picking up rubbish in the street and taking stuff out and fixing stuff. I don't see that happening in, and that's not a good or a bad thing, but you know, a lot of other businesses, the owner or whatever else, wouldn't do that and wouldn't be involved in that. And I just think there's a bit of like, I will sit down and
do you like do you like sort of being, having sort of 15 jobs?
I love it. It's great.
Yeah, I know. I get that. I'm the same. I mean, I like just running around picking crap. I've got four, maybe half a dozen hats every day, and I love being an accounts clerk, and I love being a domestic or a cleaner, and I love, you know, I've gone around with them.
But what I mean is, I love seeing the people. I love you just randomly turning up, right? And then in an hour's time, I meet some of the locals that are here, and then it might be that, you know, tour manager, we have to deal with a band, and a band comes in, and you deal with them, and dealing with all these people. I'm a sociable person, and I think that it's great to have that and have all these people effectively coming into where I live and what other people consider their part of their community. It's a big kind of, I don't know, I think, like you said, it's a big allotment for, it's a big community allotment, but for art and music and all the rest of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so what's happening now that the lockdown's happened and there isn't sort of half a dozen gigs a week. Well, how are you working?
Yeah, two things. We're currently kind of a big socially distant pub. So, you know, like you can see, there's markings on the floor, there's benches in the car park. We're trying to just generate some level of income to stave off the inevitable where you've got burgeoning ongoing costs, whether it is certain staff you can't put on furlough because you need to reorganise gigs or you need to organise staff or you need to do paperwork and budgeting. Those costs have to be met, you know, the bills, ongoing bills, whether it be pest control, that, you know, it's no use going, it's no use. So all these kind of things, it's like, you know, COVID comes, oh, you can't open. You speak to a pest control person and you go, yeah, we haven't got the money to fill, but can you still come and do? No, I'm sorry, I can't do that. So, all right, then, COVID's come, we'll let the rats move in from the rest of it. No, we can't do that. So you've got to keep finding these things to make the business go. And it's even a little bit that maybe you're eating into reserves consistently or you're trying to just stay afloat. And then getting back open gives the staff that need it some jobs, and it ain't even just economically giving them money and getting work back and forward. It's just people's mental health being sat inside doing stuff and wanting to interact with people and trying to do it safely and responsibly and doing it right. I think that there's a lot in doing that. So
is your mum involved in this?
Oh no, she's not allowed at the moment. She's got to be locked upstairs. or you know, she's on that high risk factor, but she doesn't listen to anybody. She doesn't listen to anybody. You know, she's a difficult. We'll leave that one there. But I mean, as for the sides of gigs, we are consistently just at the moment doing the same work that we were doing 2 months ago, 4 months ago, 5 months ago when it all started. The gigs that we're scheduling in for now have been moved to 2020, and even then we're starting to see people.
Well, this is 2020.
No, late 2020.
All right, right.
Sorry. Yeah. Late 2020. And then they moved into 2021 last month. And now you're seeing people going, I'm not even sure whether them Americans are coming in 2021 in this point. So let's move it to October, November. So you've got stuff that's booked in for 18 months to sometimes in 2022 ahead right now. You know, I think it's Jar Wobble or somebody who's booked in or somebody who's booked in for like 2022 already. Yeah. And you're looking at it just going, that's insane. Yeah. That's mental.
Yeah. Well, it is insane. I mean, the thing is, this is a situation we've never in our wildest sort of dreams would ever think we'd be in. You know, just sitting
across... Would you have thought last December you'd go to the supermarket and see massive queues outside the supermarket with people in masks on?
Yeah.
And you'd go, that's not possible. Go away, stupid. You know, but it's real. And I think that, you know... We also have been very careful not to reach out and go, oh, we need funding support from like public. No, I'd rather like concentrate. So we've been lobbying, you know, strongly on the government and the Let the Music Play campaign and trying to champion not only, you know, music venues, but the freelancers and tour managers and staff and musicians and everyone to do with it. That without everyone, nothing really works. You know, the sound doesn't sound as good without the sound engineer. You know, the merch companies need support because if it ain't, artists can't get their stuff printed and they're not going to take it out on tour, the tour managers won't be able to do it. Everything across the board needs to be thought about, and music certainly brings in a much more economic benefit than what is ever really being pushed across. And you have to talk, you know, like sometimes people talk about it as a dirty word, you know, economic and money and all the rest of it. And you go, well, the truth is without money, you couldn't survive as an artist, right? Yeah. We couldn't survive as a business. We don't want to talk about that. It's not the thing that drives and motivates us. But what we want to get to is from that period of being asked to stop back in March, we need to have that buffer and support to get to when you can reopen and do it safely and responsibly.
Yeah.
You know, you're not asking for any other spot. Because, you know, some businesses have jumped up in what their take are, certainly online sales. But, you know, like, I go to Otley, and the butchers in Otley were telling us they've been taking more money than ever before, you know. And
sorry to interrupt. Can I just get a signature real quick?
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm so sorry, I didn't realise.
It's all right.
I'm so sorry, mate. It's just that bit there.
Nathan's just doing some business. This is it. He never stops. It never closes.
So some businesses have got, because everyone's gone, well, we can't eat out. We can't go to the hospitality. So we're going to eat local, you know, and we're going to learn to cook. And the butchers have got, or the greengrocers, or everything else has got like up and on that localised kind of area. And I think that's great to see. But at the same time, we have to realise that there's bit parts of it that, certainly in the arts industry...
This is an artificial situation.
It is.
Some people are doing it's a nightmare, you know.
But unless we have that opportunity to get back and create different art forms that bring us mental stimulation. Like you said, you're walking down the street, you see someone singing, it made you happy and you started clapping.
He was singing Angels.
Yeah.
He was singing Robbie Williams and he sang Mr. Brightside and he sang Wonderwall. I think, oh no, Don't Look Back in Anger. And I was just standing there just drinking it in because he was a live human being and he was belting it out. He was bloody going for it. You know, he had the mic technique, but he's like, no audience. Four or five little 14-year-old girls there, you know, tubby little girls there, just all the words. And I was just there, transfixed. Just, you know, just...
But that made your day a bit brighter. And
the thing is, you drift off into a reverie. The music just takes you away.
But the same with, like, say, with art forms, you know. Right now, you, us, and all the rest of live music and art and theatre and opera and all these other things, comedy, are now battling with instant online access via your phone or tablet or TV, smart TV with Netflix and all the other stuff that are out there right now. You have to battle with that for space, you know. You're having to battle with, you know, let's look at 20 years ago, right, Mick? Channel 5 just come out, 25 years ago, right? Channel 5 just come out. Sky B just started. TV channels were creeping in more. You didn't have DAB, digital radio. Six Music didn't exist 20 years ago. You had a limited amount of FM channels, and very limited ones of them would play different types of music. And very limited of that, even on TV, could you get access to. So your access to live music or that would come through the NME or Melody Maker or Word Magazine or some of these other magazines and fanzines that you'd have to go out and find. And that's only that short period. So you go back to 30, and then you go in this last 25, 30 years, and you go, the funnel's opened up massively. And you can just go on your phone and get Spotify and Deezer and all these other things, Apple Music, listen to what you want, when you want, find new suggestions, watch your Amazon and play. You can sit there and
that's
all
your world there.
On
all
your phone.
There in a kind of little box there.
You don't need to go out and watch. You don't need to go out and watch music. You don't need to. But that doesn't have it make it social and real and humanistic. And we're humans as social beings. And I think that.
And the thing is, people don't. It talks, there's this little thing, but it doesn't, it's just basically, it makes noises and it's electronic and it doesn't care about you. All it is just a little machine, and people kind of,
and I think we
they forget
to...
that this is real, this stuff kind of seeing somebody's hairy legs, you know, and just being across a table from somebody.
I think that we need to fight against that on some stuff. That's what I would, that's what I'm really, not just fighting because... Or we want the Broodnell to still be here in 5 years' time or even in a year's time and not losing money when music comes back. But that we want everyone else to be able to do that all over the place, and that without them happening and we won't pick up influences and enjoy it as much and interact with people. And just, I keep using this, like, you know, the colouring book of the lines, and you can have the music and it might be on your phone. You can have the visuals. You can have a streamed gig and kind of half connect. But there's nothing like when you've got a colouring book and you're colouring it in and finding the colours and choosing your palettes and doing everything else. And I think that that's the point that makes it, that's the colour, you know, that brings to life. And that's what we do it for.
You take a step into that world rather than you sitting there just watching this world.
Yeah, and then it's being monotone.
And you're kind of, you're in it, you're immersed, and you're making... You affect.
You're throwing straws at people.
You affect the performer. You're there watching, and they're looking at you, and you go, oh, it's looking at me. You know, and there's a sense of
interaction.
Communication there, and you feel alive because you think, yeah, he's seen me or she's seen me or whatever.
But that's why I think it's important to protect spaces and people and things that are involved in music and art. In that, you know, without having your Trevors and your people like that are skilled to know how to do stuff and know how to tune stuff, you're going to lose transferable, important skills that make everyone's life have that colour. And I think it's not just the bricks and mortar places, it's the ones that have real life to them that we need to think. So that's what I think COVID has highlighted more than all else, is that it's given us it should give a new appreciation of all the other aspects that come with live art and music and rest of it, you know, comedy. I think that we need to understand that there's more value, and maybe it needs more, things need to be charged more. People need to be not asking for guest lists as much or free tickets or stuff like that, and actually going, you know what, this is really important, and these need payment, and there's lots of stuff behind it and everything else. I think that, like I say, there's a value that needs to be had.
It's sacred. It's a special, and it's not something that you can just kind of like plug in and it happens. But people have a lot, kind of, they give a lot of themselves, you know, and just because you can't actually see the work they've done, just because you just see some guy up there in a colourful shirt kind of jigging about a bit, that's like 10% of the work of a performer. Because
about economics, sometimes it's about appreciation. That's as important, and I think the appreciation of how important live performance and the skills and the confidence building, the education that it gives to people, you know, the transferable education of standing up in front of people and public speaking.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about the economic. I'm just saying that sort of people make things look easy. The best performers make it look easy. They think, oh God.
But they wouldn't have got that unless they'd have been in that position.
No, but also the fact that there's so much kind of work that goes into preparing to do that, to look casual and look cool, whatever you are, Sean Ryan.
And that's what I mean, is that the education of that, getting to that point, not even just for that one performance, but getting to that point is, like doing kick-ups with a football. You see the kid who can do 50 kick-ups with a football and he's really good at it, and you go, yeah, he's great, it makes it look easy. You try it and you go, I can't do any. But there's been not just a lot of practice to go into that one performance, getting there, getting the right shoes on, doing the right climate, whatever else, but then years of input and learning and growth and what went into that. But it was the interaction with many other people, seeing the influences and why you do stuff in certain ways and pick stuff up
and the love
being
of it.
Given, yeah,
because basically it's a love affair you have with a football or with a guitar, and you give that love every day. You know, you don't just give it for that time when you're on stage. That's
my football's hanging about over there in the venue. Look,
my football's down the cellar steps. I just blew it up about 2 weeks ago, and it's waiting to be kicked.
But that's what I think COVID's done. I think it's highlighted it. To those who want to interact and be part of it, it's made communities come together and champion around these kind of assets that maybe were taken for granted before. That's what I think it's done, quite importantly.
Right. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question there. I just want to say thank you very much for giving me your time. And
it's
been lovely. It's been a real joy. And it's just nice being back here, even if there's nothing happening. But I'm just going to find a way up. And thanks to all you listeners who've been listening. Right, here we go. And with all our guests, we ask them, can you give us a recommended album of the week this week, Nathan? What would you recommend as the album to listen to?
I mean, it's
this
the most popular album that's out there right now, Fontaine's DC.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It is great. It's got an up and downs in it. It's relatable. I've enjoyed it a lot, And I saw them come here and play their first album.
They played here?
They've played here several times. They're supposed to be coming back here. Yeah. We've seen them grow as a band, and I feel affinity with them. But, they're just good working class kids that written some good songs, right time, right place, right things happening. And when I talk about success, when we talked about it at first, it was, I'd love seeing them playing and playing in front of loads of people, because it's not about the money. It's about them showing that they've written some great songs that I feel should be listened to by lots of people, and it's a great album. And then you go back to first when you go to great album two. I think, it's fantastic,
Well, I can hear the enthusiasm you have for this place here, and for the people that get up on the stage here. And you talk about, I was chatting to you about a week ago, and you were saying, oh, Low, my band, and I was, because I've got an album of theirs at home. I've got this one album, and it's not even them. It's them and a band called The Dirty Three. And it's like,
they both played here. I said that, haven't
I? Man, and it's a wonderful album. And it just turned up in a charity shop, but I took it home and I gave it to a mate of mine. Gave it to these people who look after bikes. So I gave it away, and I'm thinking, but they were really nice to me. They looked after my bike, and I thought, well, no, I'll give them, and I can pick this album up again somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's like, you've had whoever, Sleaford Mods here, and you've had Jonathan Richmond. Has he been here?
Yeah,
as well?
He's been here.
So all these people are like kind of heroes. There's a lot of kind of integrity and a lot of maverickness and beauty from these people, and it's just nice. But anyway, I'm gonna just say, thanks, Nathan, for coming on the podcast. Thanks to you listeners for tuning in. Nathan continues to put music on at the Broodnell, or the Brood, as it's known locally. Look out for Tom Jones, Fontaine's DC, and Lee Scratch Perry later on this year. Details can be found on the website, broodnellsocialclub.co.uk, on Twitter at Nathan_Broodnell, on Facebook, Broodnell Social Club. You can listen to this again and download the podcast on iTunes, Mick Artistic's Ego Podcast.
Further links can be found on our website, mickartistic.com. And if you like what you hear, give us a review on iTunes and share the podcast with your mates. See you on the road and on the waves next time. Bye.